When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
This episode is brought to you by Paramount Plus. Get in, loser! Mean Girls is now streaming on Paramount Plus. Join Katie Heron as she meets the plastics and Tina Fey's new twist on the modern classic. Get ready for more of the rumors, backstabbing, and jokes you loved from the original movie with some fetch surprises. Rated PG-13. Wear pink and head to ParamountPlus.com to try it free.
What's going on, everybody? Hope you are having a wonderful week so far. This is the last podcast before Christmas, which is exciting. And it's a good one. Burns has been around for many years. He is producer, DJ, pop writer, makes amazing club records, makes amazing pop records, has worked with Lady Gaga, ASAP Rocky, Calvin Harris, some of the biggest names in the world. He's also recently released a record called Talamanca, which is absolutely blowing up on the club scene and also radio here in the UK. We've been in touch for probably about 4 months now, just talking on Instagram, and I thought I'd get him on. Great conversation, super nice guy. So without further ado,
and we're live. Me a little more.
Yeah,
there you go.
We're live. Cool. How are you, mate?
Good, mate. How's things?
Good. Thanks for coming on. It's good to meet you as well. This is the first time we've actually ever spoken in person.
I know, right?
Well, over the internet.
It's good to finally have a kind of half in-person chat.
I know, right? It's nice. It's nice. Whereabouts in the world are you?
I'm in Los Angeles.
Nice.
Where are you? You're not UK then. You're in America.
No, I'm in the UK right now. But I go between Detroit and the UK.
Wow, yeah. Detroit. Okay, I didn't know that you lived in Detroit.
That's yeah,
mad.
Yeah, so I've lived there for the last 4 years, on and off. I pretty much just go over there when I tour,
right?
And then just come back to the UK when I'm not. There's something going weird with this fucking sound. Can you hear that glitching?
Yeah, I thought it was the mic moving or something.
Yeah, no.
Is it not?
No.
It's the ghosts.
It's our internet, mate. Something's not aligning tonight. It's all good.
Is it me? Do you think it's mine?
I don't know. It's fine now. We're good. Fuck it.
Hopefully you don't have you get the podcast ready and it's just got this terrible loud sound all the way through it, through the entire thing.
It looks all right on the I'm looking at the kind of recorder and it looks fine. We're good. Where are you from then? You're from the UK.
Yeah, I'm from Stafford originally. Oh, okay.
Nice. How long did you how long ago did you move to LA?
Wait, I need to turn notifications off on this as well, don't I?
Yeah, probably.
Terrible. sorry, I'm using an iPad right now.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Maybe that's the issue.
Really?
I don't know. It looks good, though.
Yeah. I just never did the whole, like, pro Zoomer setup.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, like when COVID happened, everybody got like the proper webcam and like had it mounted and shit, and I just never did that.
So. Yeah, I still haven't got the webcam. I've like just using the laptop one, and it looks terrible.
Well, the reason I don't use the, I don't know if it's to do with me, like I use a PC when I make music. I use Cubase.
Really?
And I could never get the audio thing to work with. You know, like be able to make tunes and be on Zoom at the same time.
Yeah.
But I'm just not that technical. So it's probably just me.
You're literally like, I know about two people that use Cubase now because I started on Cubase.
Really?
Yeah.
I feel like that's the typical thing is people are they say like, oh, yeah, I started on that, but I just never
carried on.
With me, I carried on. So.
What's it like now?
I think it's amazing. Yeah. I mean, I don't venture too far away from it, so I couldn't compare it that much. But I use Ableton a little when I do anything sort of mix orientated, you know, like make a DJ mix or anything like that. And I find Ableton pretty nice to use, but I just never could switch now. It's been so long. I'm just like so used to it. It would be too scary to move.
It's that learning curve, isn't it? It's like to switch, you have to kind of learn a certain amount. This glitch is really fucking doing my head in. And I don't know what it is. Let me just plug this in. It's not the mic.
Yeah, that can't be to do with me. That must be your side. Surely.
I don't know. It's so weird.
I can't hear it now.
No, me neither. It just comes occasionally. I couldn't. I don't think I could do it. Yeah, it's there. Can you hear that?
I heard it then, yeah. Like a little dropout for like a half a second or something.
Fuck, nice. This is the most professional podcast going on right now. Yeah, it's every time I talk.
Is it?
Yeah. And then it's not. Sorry for anybody that's listening to this.
I think it's doable though. People aren't going to be too freaked out.
Just gonna have to roll with it, aren't we?
I mean, at least we're not on like the bus on our iPod headphones doing this. You know,
yeah, I did a podcast with Duke yesterday, Duke Dumont, and he had like his gardeners in the background, like wind blowing the fucking house down by it sounded like.
Well, I was concerned because I do actually have like a big construction site at the back of my house right now. Like the neighbors are building like an extension or something. I was like, this is going to be the loud thing that really fucks shit up.
Yeah.
But actually, it seems like it's not. It's the more technical issue.
It's something to do with
hearing.
So annoying. How come you moved to LA then? What was the deal with that?
It was never planned, really.
Okay.
It was just I feel like it happens to a lot of people in music where you end up just being there more and more until it gets to the point where it doesn't really make sense to not be there.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like at the time when I moved to LA, I was touring a bit, but I was also trying to sort of get more into the production side of things for like other artists, you know, like pop production. That kind of started to build a little bit. So it just made more sense to me to be out here for that kind of stuff.
I guess there's a lot more pop stuff kind of in LA. To be real,
LA's more like the hub for that kind of stuff, you know. And at the time I was sort of moving more into that world and sort of a little bit away from the whole DJ side of stuff.
Yeah.
I was so gravitating towards that more than doing the artist thing at the time. So yeah, it made sense. And I was coming out here every summer, and then I sort of just one time I just stayed and just didn't go back. Like I was renting a place in London at the time. I didn't really own a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
So it was just like, it was super easy to just make the switch. Mm. So,
Prefer it out there?
When I moved out here, I didn't. I really missed England for a while. I feel like that is the same for a lot of people too. Like the sort of shock of how different it is.
It's really strange because we speak kind of the same language to Americans. We kind of have very similar cultures, but also it's so different.
Yeah, for sure. But also just the difference between LA and London is so vast as well, as a city. And like the way of living is so different too.
Yeah.
You have to get used to not being able to just step out your front door and be like in the middle of a busy street and, you know, go and meet somebody for coffee real quick or whatever. Mm. It's more that sort of New York kind of vibe in London. Yeah. Whereas here, it's such a like huge space and it's so like difficult to move around and stuff. And just the way that people work out here is different. It's sort of a lot more laid back, I find. And it just is a bit of a shock to the system when you first make the switch. It's like, where am I? Hey, man. Yeah. Like it's kind of crazy. And I'd miss that aspect of London, just the sort of
hustle and bustle,
the fast pace of hustle and bustle. But now it's the opposite. I kind of actually love the vibe here. And when I go back to London, I kind of like, I miss LA a little bit. So I've gotten used to it, I guess. And now I have a family here. I've got two kids. I've got my missus here. I've got a dog.
Yeah.
I have my house here. So it's like I'm fully sort of settled here now.
Yeah. Is your missus American as well?
She is. She's from Nebraska, though. She's not from here. So they're kind of... She's from a sort of out in the middle of nowhere type area as well. So. Yeah.
Sorry, mate. This is really annoying me. I don't know.
What's it's doing on. Your head
it's
in.
Doing my head in, mate. I don't know what it is.
Really is there like a way of listening back to a part of the recording just to see how it sounds? Or
no,
is that,
no, not really. It would be long. How's it? Wow. How is it having kids in LA?
I mean, my kids are 6 months old, so it's been pretty new.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, we had twins during COVID. So
congrats.
It's been a lot of thanks, mate. Yeah, it's been a lot of sleepless nights.
Yeah, I bet.
So far. But I mean, it's incredible. It's amazing. It's just it's a lot of work, man. Having especially twins is like a whole other level as well.
Well, you don't ever plan to have twins, do you? It's just like it just happens. And
the thing is, you kind of don't know any different either. So I don't know what it's like to have just one kid. So I've got nothing to compare it to. So I'm just, you know, getting on with it. But it's incredible. So good. But
has having kids changed your like workflow and kind of changed your like view on your career or anything like that?
It kind of makes me, on one side of it, makes me even more driven, I guess, because you kind of have these two extra lives that you're responsible for now. But then on the other hand as well, I'm trying to be more present as well with them.
Yeah.
Trying not to sort of be consumed too much with music, you know, because before I had a family, like my own family, it was kind of like, music is just everything to me. 24/7 you don't switch off, which is it's difficult. I mean, you know what it's like as well. It's sort of that thing where it's not like the 9-to-5 job where you get home at 5-6 p.m. or whatever and switch off and you can just chill. You kind of, it's always in your brain and you know that you can work whenever you want, so it's difficult to like to snap out of that mindset a bit. But I feel like it's changed me in a positive way, because it's helped me kind of become just more present in life and like try and absorb, you know, what's going on around me a little bit more, rather than just being completely wrapped up in music stuff all the time.
Yeah, no, I think it's really important, because a lot of us don't have things outside of music. Whether that's family, whether that's, I don't know, whatever. Like, I was literally talking to one of my mates today. I was like, I need to get a hobby, because it just like, it sometimes it just screws your brain.
I think that is really important, as well as having something outside of music that you're also passionate about too, because it also is really good for your creativity to not focus on one thing the whole time, you know?
Yeah.
Just to give your brain a bit of a break can really sort of help.
I don't know about you though, but for me, like, when I find something that I'm like also passionate about outside of music, I'm like, how do I make this successful? How do I make this like a career? Which is like the most stupid thing, because
I guess it's like a type of personality, isn't it? Someone that, I guess, to do music, you've got to be a pretty driven, sort of career-minded person, I guess. So you just flip that to anything, basically. So
pretty much.
Like, oh, I really enjoy fishing. How can I be a pro?
it's literally that.
Really enjoying going down to the lake. It's like, no, I got to be the best.
I got to be the best. Got to be number one. It's definitely annoying, because it's like, it's so hard to switch off from it then. But what's it like being more in the like the pop writing world in LA? Or just generally, because I don't really come across. I've done some pop stuff, but it's more like dance floor pop stuff for other people. Mm-hmm. It's not like been straight up pop, because you've done some records with some big pop artists.
Yeah, I enjoy it actually, because it, like I was saying before, even though it is music, it's different. It's a completely different world to, you know, what I sort of started out making and where I come from musically. So it's quite nice to be able to dip in and out of different, even though it's the same thing, it's still music. It's like dipping into a different world of music and coming back to dance music whenever I want and stuff. It feels like you can get some sort of little breather and a break, and you can get inspired from the pop world and sort of bring that into what you're doing in the dance world, as well as vice versa. So it's kind of nice to be able to dip in and out of genres a bit.
Yeah.
For me anyway, because I've always had that issue where as a producer, as an artist, I could never really find what I sound like.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Totally. Yeah.
It's sort of, I just love music in general. And if I could, I would make, you know, like one day I can make like an R&B record and the next day like a techno record. It's just like, however I feel at the time, it just affects what I want to make. So I think that was the way for me to vent that feeling was in the pop world, even though it feels like you're quite constricted by like labels and radio and shit, you're actually kind of free, because a pop record can be anything really.
Totally.
Like it doesn't have to sound a certain way. Like it just has to
be popular. Sort of,
it has to appeal to the masses, but it can be masked in any kind of form of music, which is pretty freeing when you think about it.
Yeah, I love the concept of pop music. I think it's like everything. Yeah, the concept of pop music is great, but whether or not it gets done, how the concept sounds, is a different situation, if you know what I mean. Because I feel like it's the same in dance music nowadays. It's very formulaic in lots of genres, in lots of ways. It's just purely to get you on to the radio, or get you onto a certain playlist, or get you onto a certain label. I find a lot of it's not actually like trying to be really good music. It's trying to just get on those playlists.
Yeah.
If that makes any sense.
I do agree with you that there's a lot of formulaic music in every genre. I think that, I mean, if you take like tech house, for instance, there has become like a sort of blueprint for that type of music.
Yeah.
And it feels like a lot of the time everybody's sort of following this template of what the tune should do and how it should sound. But, and then again, that can be the same for pop music too. But I guess what's cool and what's sort of fun is trying to bend that blueprint a bit. Just like, I don't know, it's hard to explain, but I enjoy sort of trying to present it in a different sort of way and seeing if it works. And if it doesn't, it doesn't. If it does, amazing. Like, you know, like bringing influences from where I come from musically and sort of like records that really inspired me as a kid and trying to inject that into pop music in America is kind of interesting to me.
What music did you grow up on?
My sort of earliest memories of music were kind of like the early 90s stuff. Yeah. Like my mom was like a huge house music fan, obviously like affected me a lot when I was a kid, even though I didn't really know what it was at the time. But she loved like sort of those crossover like acid house type tunes from the early 90s that were, there were hits in England, but were still sort of cool records. When I sort of started getting my own sort of taste when I was a teenager, I just listened to like trance music, basically.
Cheesy trance.
Like I had so many trance compilation CDs.
That was the thing in the 90s. Like, I remember it was the same for me. Like, 90s, early 2000s, it was just trance everywhere in the UK.
Yeah, like, the early 2000s was such a good era, though, for that music. And when you go back to it now and listen back, you kind of, you can appreciate it even more. It's the kind of, I don't know, it's aged really well, that kind of era of music.
I think you look what like Tale of Us and Art Bat and kind of that crew are doing at the moment, and it's, although it's not trance, I call it man trance, where it's just like
man trance.
It's
man,
yeah, it's like I don't know why I call it that, but so I heard somebody say it and it just clicked. But it's using influences from the trance days massively.
But I love that. I like the kind of, I love to hear those sort of references in music now. Just generally, like, I feel like the whole acid house thing is obviously coming back a bit.
And yeah.
You can hear that in a lot of dance music now.
A lot of the 90s is back in dance music at end of, if you know what I mean. Like, a lot of people are using old rave stabs. It's kind of coming back, which is interesting because in house music, I don't write pop so much, so maybe you can kind of tell me this, but in house it's always looking back on how to make things sound how it used to when it first came out. I don't know if it's like that in pop.
I guess not. I mean, obviously, you can hear the big sort of 80s revival in pop music now as well.
Yeah.
So I guess so. I mean, I think it's always like a recycle thing with music. Like, it's all the sort of, it's almost like all the ideas have been done already. Yeah. And you just got to figure out ways to sort of recycle that feeling again, that you, whatever it is that you love about a certain song. And how to present that again in like the modern day, I guess, because, you know, there's only a certain amount of chords.
Exactly, yeah. A
certain amount of drum patterns. Yeah. And, you know, you can't invent more of them. So it's always going to be like a rehash thing of something old that has inspired you at some point. Even if you don't even realize it at the time, it's really funny, like, you can be sort of subliminally influenced by something, and then afterwards somebody would be like, oh, it reminds me of that tune, what so-and-so, and then you look it up and you're like, oh, it actually is a bit like that, even if you haven't intended it to be. I think just things sort of, people just pick up influences along the way, and it's, I think music is just, it, that's just what music is, really. It's just, it's sort of the human presenting their moments of their life,
their memories, isn't it? Really, and or trying to kind of recreate it.
You can only do that, though. It's like, that's the only way to really do it. Is you're pulling it from somewhere. You're not just like, it's not just appearing out of nowhere. You know. So, I feel like all the genres of music are sort of recycling something. And yeah, I think it's cool. I enjoy, it's funny, like I was chatting to a songwriter friend of mine, this guy called Pablo from the UK last week, and he was like, we were talking about like just referencing stuff, and he was like, oh, well, that's funny, because when I explain you to people in sessions, I always say you're like an encyclopedia of 90s music. Like, kind of a compliment, yeah. It's like, I love, there's nothing more fun to me than like finding a song that has inspired me in the past, or like something that's influenced me, and like referencing that just slightly in something new. Else, like I love trying to, because I like trying to kind of evoke the same feeling that it gave me at the time or whatever in a new song. I think it's really cool. So, yeah, I've sort of drifted off.
I totally agree with you, because there's like records that I've written that I'm trying to be somebody else. And like, I generally would listen to a record and be like, I want to make a record like this. Yeah. And I would literally have the record in the project. And although I'm not recreating the record, I'm trying to create that same feeling. And It's a really interesting kind of way to write. And I think some of you, like personally, some of my best records have come from doing that.
Yeah, I think that's a, I think it's a good technique. And I think it probably is something that gets done quite a lot. It's always making sure that if you do have some sort of reference for what the feeling in the music was intended to be like, going back and forth is a good way to do it, just to keep you in that world, I guess, if you're trying to reference something.
Do you do much with hip hop?
Like ripping something off. It's just evoking a feeling, you know? You wanna get the same feeling from the record you're making.
It's taking influence, isn't it? And it's just putting yourself, seeing if whatever you're making kind of gives you the same feels.
I mean, there's not it even applies to, you know, like art, like painters or whatever, you know, they're not just painting some completely new thing that's never been thought of before, you know. Everyone's influenced by another artist from some point in their life, and that same with music and everything. So
totally. Have you done much with hip hop in whilst being out there?
I've done a bit. Yeah, I've done stuff. I did like a French Montana record.
I did
Heady One recently, which is UK.
Yeah,
that was cool. And there's a new artist that I've just sort of finished his album, but he's super new. He's not like, it's more like we're trying to develop him, but he's like, he's hip hop, but he's also sort of, I don't know, it's like R&B pop influence as well. This kid called Johnny Yukon, but we just finished his like first official album, and that is pretty much like hip hop, very like hip hop influence, like sounding music. So it's kind of, I don't know, I think it's just really important to listen to everything.
A lot,
Even if you're just going to make techno or house music or whatever, I still think it's important to make sure you don't just listen to that type of music.
So. I couldn't think of anything worse, personally. Like, if I'm...
Yeah, but I feel like there are people that do that, like, narrow their sort of...
horizons.
Narrow their mind a little, like, oh, if I'm going to make this, I just need to listen to this all the time. But I find it difficult to do that.
Yeah, I think for me is like, I also need to give my ears a break and be like, I need some more like inspiration than just fucking techno or house or whatever. I don't often listen to it. I go through like days where I listen to something. I listen to like an electronic album for like a day, and then I won't listen to stuff for ages. I'll go listen to some like country music or whatever. I've actually gotten into country music recently, which is something that I thought I'd never admit.
Wow, that is a curveball. I didn't expect you to say that.
I know. I'm like, I want to go see live shows. I want to go see like someone sing live and like someone play a guitar. And I don't know.
I reckon the country live gigs are pretty popping.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. I think it's like the people that go as well, right? It's like,
yeah, they just want to have like a lot of fun. Yeah. It's like going to the rodeo.
Exactly. Have you been to a rodeo?
Nah, but I've always thought it looks amazing. Yeah. Like, it looks fun.
I want to go when I'm in Texas next, when it's actually like rodeo season.
You got to do it. You got to do it real. Like Texas vibes is the real deal. So
yeah, like proper redneck.
Like, yeah,
that's all I want.
Get a cowboy hat, get a checkered shirt on, some Levi's.
Get those, what are they called? What are those pants called? Oh my God, I should definitely know this. Chaps. Get the chaps out.
Get some assless chaps.
Literally.
Turning up to the rodeo.
Yeah.
That'd be fun.
How do you, like, let's say, for instance, that, what was the guy's name that you just did a project for?
Johnny Yukon.
So going into that project, is that like, right, we are spending the next 2 months writing an album and your whole focus is on that? Or how does the setup work for that as well?
So I kind of agreed to do like the exec production role for him last year, which I guess when you do that, you're not solely producing the entire record yourself. Yeah. You're almost sort of overseeing the album and helping sort of A&R it, as well as helping finish songs too and doing songs from scratch. But so he writes with various other people as well. And then he'll get ideas and then bring them to me and we'll sort of hone them in and finish them. But we were doing sort of 2 days a week on it. And we just finished it. It took probably 6 months or something to do. But I mean, with him, me and him have been working for years. He was one of the first people I wrote with when I came out to LA. So we were both sort of new to the kind of LA world of songwriting, but he was doing the artist thing as well. And we just became friends through that. And I've just always really believed in him as an artist. So it made sense when it came to him. He got like a deal with a major label, and then it came to the point where he was going to do an actual album. Yeah. So it made sense for us to do that together because we were so close anyway, and we worked so much. I just knew what he wanted musically to do. So it made sense that way, but we made sure that I could still have time to work on the other stuff that I was doing. So it wasn't just like locked down for 6 months and not working anything else. So We just did a couple of days a week on it, and it came together really quick. I think because we're so used to working together, it was pretty easy. But that's a different process to like when I did the Gaga thing, where we just did an entire year without working on really anything else, which was mad.
How was that?
Like that was an intense sort of writing process because you didn't really have time to do anything else because it was just so much.
Is that 5 days a week? 6 days? Like, what's that?
Usually just 5 days. We try and get the weekends, but then sometimes we would go through the weekends as well. So
how is that? How is that on the brain?
Pretty grueling.
Yeah, I bet.
And that was right before COVID happened as well. So it was the year before the whole COVID thing kicked off. And then as soon as we finished the album, literally within 2 weeks, the world shut down, which is so insane. So we just come from being like locked in this studio for like a year to then being locked down at home for like another year.
2 years, basically.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, that was pretty mad.
How does that come about? Things like the Gaga and kind of, because it's kind of so out of my world that I'm just like, how do you even start to kind of have those conversations?
Well, that project came through Blood Pop, who's a pop producer slash artist over here.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've heard of him before.
No, I haven't.
He's a producer. He did like, you know, the Justin Bieber like Purpose album, one that Skrillex did a lot of.
He
kind of worked on that with Skrillex on a lot of those songs. But he was the person that kind of brought me into that whole Gaga thing. He hit me on Instagram. I guess he heard like some stuff that I'd done, and I just put a record out with ASAP Rocky and Sabrina Claudio. It was like a house tune, but it had them on it. And I think he'd heard that and he just wanted to connect and listen to some stuff. So I met him at his studio and we just sat and kind of played a bunch of music. Yeah. And I didn't know he was working on Gaga at the time. And then I guess we sort of shared like a common ground on like what we wanted to happen in pop music, I guess. And I think my influences were sort of what he was looking for Gaga, because he wanted her to do this
90s trance.
It's like nostalgic dance record, you know, like Madonna, Vogue type thing. So he had all these sort of ideas, but he, I guess, maybe didn't have the references that I had in order to sort of evoke that kind of feeling in the music. But, you know, I would start whipping out all these old tunes that I knew and like sort of sounds that I had known from records when I was a teenager and shit. And like, I think that really grabbed him and he was kind of like, yeah, this is the sort of vibe that we want to go for. So that he had me work on just one song to begin with.
Yeah.
Because he was exec producing that whole project. So they had a demo that was just like a vocal and her singing over piano. It was this record called Enigma.
Mm-hmm.
And I just did a pass of it and it was like a sort of very Vogue, like 90s house version.
Yeah.
And I kind of thought it was so far down that road that it would be too much. Like it was so like, it just sounded like a tune from the early 90s, like in the UK or something. but they all loved it, and it was kind of like that then became sort of the sort of blueprint for what the rest of the record became. And it started just one song and then it became like 10 songs. And by the time I knew it, it had been like a year and we'd been working on it. It just sort of snowballed from there. But it was incredible. It was amazing. Like, it's not very often you get to work with someone like she is such like an artist, you know. It's not like the typical pop star thing, you know. She's very much like hands-on involved in the songwriting. She's like one of those iconic sort of pop acts so it was a pretty special time, even though it was so like intense and so much
pressure.
So much pressure and so many like long hours. Like we would work till like 4 a.m. and shit like most days. So it's kind of like wild. But
do you like doing that?
I think I just got used to it. Like, you kind of just get in this world where you're sort of, it's almost like a bit surreal. You're like in this studio ball, like bubble, and you kind of, you get lost in it a little bit. So I definitely wasn't used to working like that, but it kind of, it just was something that you kind of like had to do, and it became normal then eventually. But I remember after it just being, it kind of just being like in a bit of a daze, like what just happened? Like a whole year had kind of gone by. And it was literally just that. And then with the COVID thing on top of it, after that, it was just kind of very strange.
Because
once you do that, you kind of feel like you need a break. You need to just get out of it and stuff.
And you can't.
You can't even leave the house then. So it's kind of weird, but.
Do you prefer writing with other people? Do you think that's when your best work comes out? Or are you much more someone that likes to write by themselves?
I like writing songs with other people. But if I'm producing stuff, I like to be alone. You know what I mean? I hate producing something in front of someone.
Yeah.
It's kind of weird, but I've gotten used to the songwriting side of it, where I can write a song much quicker and easier if I've got someone to bounce off, like, you know, melodies and lyrics and all that kind of stuff. But when it comes to actually finishing the record and figuring out the sound of it and the production side, I like to just be alone for a good few days.
definitely. It's interesting because I do really like being in the studio with other people.
Yeah,
but I really don't like when somebody else is producing.
I don't like anyone touching the laptop apart from me.
No, and I'm working on this like pop project at the moment, and I'm like more like exec, and not doing any of the laptop stuff.
And it's hard, yeah.
It's so strange. It's such a good, I've learned a lot doing it. Huge amounts. Yeah. And it has helped me massively in my own production. But it's giving away that control where, it's a bit weird.
It's definitely strange, when there's more than one producer in the room, it's quite hard to, because you know in your head what you want to happen.
Yeah.
But if somebody else has the reins, it's hard to be, you don't want to be that guy that's over their shoulder, like touching the screen and shit.
Oh, yeah, no, definitely not.
Difficult.
And it's also you got to check your ego. And especially if you're in that exec role, you kind of have to take a bit of a higher ground and you're not the artist. You're kind of just the one giving ideas at the back and kind of making sure that the room carries on doing well.
Yeah, it's definitely a different mindset. You have to, you've got to consider the team, I guess, involved, making sure that the ship
keeps going
smoothly.
Yeah.
But I do enjoy producing with other people through the sort of idea phase of making a record, but then when it comes to finishing a song or something, I just like to do just because sometimes you can just be playing around with one sound for so long. you don't need somebody watching you mess about with a kick drum for a few hours or whatever. It's just
It's so boring when you're sat next to somebody doing that as well, and you're just watching.
Yeah.
And I'm like, dude, it's a kick drum. It's fine. Come on. Let's just move on to the next.
Just EQing the hi-hat for an hour. But it's fun sometimes to do that type of stuff on your own. Really get into the whole sort of mixing and stuff, even though you shouldn't really if you're going to get it mixed anyway. But it's I like to sort of spend a lot of time on sonic stuff, but when I'm in my own world, when I feel like I've just got some time to mess about on my own.
I wish I was good at mixdowns, but I'm really not. And it's something...
I'm not that good, but I don't know. It's like, I don't even know what is good. Because it's sort of, it just depends what you want it to sound like.
Totally.
So, like, the whole mix thing is, especially in...
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Like dance music, I guess, because you might be trying to get a certain sound that isn't necessarily, you know, the cleanest mix.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I find it quite hard, because when you get a demo that you really love, you've kind of, you've got a certain sound to it that was how you imagined it. And it's hard to like have somebody then sort of mix that to their taste afterwards.
Do you get your like club stuff mixed by somebody else?
Yeah. I mean, I haven't figured out the perfect person for that. Yeah. But like, I don't make a lot of club stuff really. Yeah, it's funny because I sort of had like a bit of a hiatus from making club music, and now I only just put out like a few records recently, and I was trying to figure out, you know, who's best to help make them sound good, but also make them sound like how I imagine them in my head as well.
Let me put you in touch with someone. I'll put you in touch with someone that's really good.
Yeah.
A guy called, I've had him on the podcast actually. He does all my mastering, but he also helps me with mixdowns. So I use him as like a second pair of ears rather than actually go and like, mate, can you go and mix this down?
What is funny is that I realized that because I've been doing the pop thing for such a long time, what felt like a long time, and sort of drifted away from club music, is I stopped making music in general like with the club in mind. So even those records that I just did on FFRR, like they sound good on like in the car and shit, and like sound on the headphones.
But
I did a show, which is like the first time I played in like a couple of years.
Yeah.
And I realized they're definitely not meant to be me in the club. Like, they just, I'd forgotten about like how much you need to really pay attention to like the low end and shit like that for the club. Because I've been like kind of a little bit out of that world for a while. And it is a whole different ball game. Like, just making sure that something sounds right on a system.
Yeah.
Because you can forget that kind of stuff when you're just focusing on the song more than the actual waveform.
I'm the opposite to you in that situation, where I was literally, I was listening to the radio earlier and Talamanca came on and I was like, damn, this sounds so good on the radio. Whereas like, I'm trying to make records that sound fucking great in a club, which like I without sounding too arrogant, I can do that pretty easily.
Yeah.
But then it's like, how do I get this like huge low end to sound good on a radio? And
you do have the opposite to me, because I don't think Talamanca sounds good in a club. When I listened to it, when I played it, I was like, this doesn't sound as good as like other tunes.
Yeah.
But I know that Talamanca sounds good on the radio.
It sounds great. Like,
it sounds good in the car when I listen to it and shit. Mm. But that's because when I made it, that was all I was listening to it for. Like, I didn't even think about the club, which is weird because it is a club tune.
Such a club record.
Yeah, but it's mad. I made the tune on headphones.
Oh, really?
Because I had just finished that Gaga stuff and we went into lockdown and I didn't have a studio at home because I'd been working like all over LA in different studios that didn't really have a spot. So I started making tunes just in my kitchen, like on my headphones. And that was one of the ones that I finished in that kind of era. And I hadn't even really listened to our speakers until it was mixed. But I had Tom Norris mix that.
Okay.
I don't know if you've heard of Tom, but he basically does a lot of Skrillex's stuff.
Ah, okay.
So sort of the more kind of, I guess, sort of American EDM sounding stuff.
Yeah.
But he does a lot of pop stuff as well.
Mm.
But I worked with him on the Gaga shit. We worked closely together. That's cool. Because he was in a... He had like a mix studio next door to where we were working on the album, so we could go in while he was mixing and be like, "Oh, this sounds amazing!" Blah blah, blah, and give notes.
That process is got to be priceless to like go from creating it to then the mix down pretty much straight away.
Yeah, right next door as well. Because you can also then edit the production halfway through the mix because he can be mixing it, and I'll be like, "Oh, that." Whatever, the hi-hat sounds weird, let me switch it out for something. So it's kind of like that was priceless to be able to do that. I think he, because me and him worked for like a year together, basically he kind of figured out what I liked. So when it came to getting my own tunes mixed again, it felt natural to try and have him do that as well. And he, what he did to Talamanca was like, he took it to like a another level from where I even had it. So it just worked for that song, I think, because he mixes with the radio in mind. It kind of, that's why it sounds so good.
Well, and that's why it gets played on radio so fucking much, like let's be honest, because if there's been a lot of club records, like I would say the last club record, and I'm happy to be wrong, but the last club record up until Talamanca to be played this much was Ten Walls Walking with Elephants.
Mm-hmm.
Which, again, sounds fucking amazing on the radio as well.
Does it sound shit in a club, though?
It...
I don't know.
I never played it. It would never be a record that I would have played.
Right, yeah.
But yeah, so I've never listened to it in a club.
It's
the first instrumentals that I've heard that are like get that much play on radio. Like it's very unheard of. Like you know much more than me how much a vocal for radio means something. How did that happen?
I don't know. I mean, the idea was in my head was like, how do I make a tune that feels like those sort of classic riff-based tunes? Because there hadn't been one for a while that was just a riff that people gravitated to. And yeah, I was listening to like Pajanu and stuff like that.
I was going to say that. I was literally going to say that.
Actually, that record was kind of like the reason for trying it. It was like, that felt like the last time a record like that had happened. Like, sort of, it was just a chord riff and there was no vocal and they never put a vocal on it. And the amount of times that, like, I've been asked to put a vocal on Talamanca is so insane. And actually we tried a bunch of things and in the end I was like, you know what, it just shouldn't have a vocal. It's like, there were things that were good as well, that like maybe would have made it even bigger, but it just didn't feel like right or something to do it.
I think sometimes
as much as that pissed off the label.
Oh yeah, I bet Andy was well pissed off with that.
Like, I think that I did a lot of people's heads in, but
yeah,
I don't know. I feel like the legacy of the tune is much longer if I don't fuck around with that shit. But
I totally agree. I don't know any occasion where a club record has had vocals added to it and it's made it better.
Yeah, I mean, it's the question of, has it made it better or more popular? Because just because it's more popular doesn't mean it's better.
Exactly.
Because
yeah.
It has worked. You know, like there's been tunes where they've added a vocal that's definitely made it bigger. But does anyone that loved the original like it more with the vocal? And I don't think that's...
No.
But, yeah, I feel like that tune's just an anomaly. Like, I'm not going to make another one like that. Because I was kind of like, well, now I'm expected to follow that tune up. And it's like... And I sat in the studio and I was like trying to come up with another riff. And I was like, there's no point. Like, I can't just recycle the string sound again or whatever and do another riff. So it's just like, I think it's just going to be what it is and that's that. But
I think that's really nice that is though, I think, I don't know if you've put pressure on yourself because it's so easy to sit down and put pressure on yourself and be like, I have to do this or I have to follow this up. But if you can just turn around and accept that this is just doing its own thing and now it's on to the next thing and whatever happens to the next thing happens. I think
that's
really
where
important.
I'm at now. I think at first I was like, I've got to beat Talamanca.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if that's going to happen, but...
Well, you could, but it could be something completely different.
Yeah, maybe it's a different vibe if it is, but it's not going to be... It goes back to what we were saying at the beginning. I can't, like, just rehash that and, like, make that my sound because it just gets boring.
Yeah.
It's
a moment piece, isn't it?
I think it is just a moment. Like, it felt like it felt like a really sort of perfectly timed tune somehow for how everybody felt at the time when it came out and shit. And like we were just coming out of lockdown type of thing.
It's perfect.
And there was a big tune with a big riff for people to dance to or whatever. It felt good.
And people love it. Like I've played my edit of it and people love it.
We've got to get your edit into the world, man.
Right, it's never gonna happen.
But why don't we just you should just put it out. Like just not chuck it online.
I don't think Andy's gonna like me if I do that.
You know.
Fuck him. Yeah, we should definitely send it out to people.
I feel like it's definitely like something that people are going to play.
Yeah, it works. People do really know that record. Like, it's got something.
What's
about
mad
it.
is yesterday I saw a video of Pete Tong doing it in his classical.
Oh, really?
Thing. You know, he's doing that Ibiza classic.
Yeah,
thing.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's a real moment because it feels like. Because he's just playing Ibiza classics with an orchestra. And then it was Talamanca, and I was like, oh, okay. Well, that's like sort of, it feels like...
It's so strange to say, but you have made a classic record.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I keep thinking. It's like, is it going to be a few years from now where people really remember that tune? Because I don't know if it's like, if even music is like that anymore. You know, like how records were big in the sort of 90s and they just go down as classics or whatever.
Yeah.
I don't know if the climate in music allows for that to happen anymore.
I think I hear what you're saying. And I don't think the climate is geared for that. But I think
everything moves so quickly now.
So quickly. But, you know? But I think if you have the right record, I think it does.
Yeah.
Like... Camel Fat Cola.
Yeah.
Like, even though that wasn't, it wasn't in the era of classics then, it was still very throwaway music then.
Yeah,
it's a fucking classic. I don't care what anyone says. MK Storm Queen remix, like these are all like kind of modern day classics. And I do think like Pajano and what you've got done with Talamanca, I think the thing with Talamanca is that you've done, you haven't reinvented the wheel, but you've kind of remixed the wheel and kind of put it on back to front and created something that sounds like a euphoric record, but it's still very modern.
Yeah.
It's great, well, man. It's great.
Thanks, man. Because, yeah, that was the plan.
Yeah, yeah, and you smashed it.
It was like, how do I make a tune that is like, you know, those early 2000s tunes, but for now, you know, that was the idea behind that. Somehow that worked.
Yeah. No, it's great. Do you with your kind of Burns project, are you like fully on that now and just being like, I want to become like an artist in that sense, or are you still kind of toeing the producing side of things as well?
I mean, I'm definitely still sort of half and half.
Yeah.
It's weird because before the FFRR stuff started coming out, I had planned on not doing the Burns thing, really.
Yeah,
like I was gonna just duck out and just be full pop producer, and maybe do like an alias as just for a laugh, you know. And I did like an alias in 2019. I did this record under the name Jamie River.
Okay.
And I put it out on Salado's label.
Actually. Oh, really?
And like, and it was just like a really sort of deep house tune. Yeah. It wasn't like any vibe, right? It was just like a very like minimal tune. But I'd already thought like I was going to leave the artist thing behind and just do like full focus on production. But then after doing that Gaga album and coming out the other side of it, I just felt like I wanted to make some tunes for fun that weren't really, because it was also lockdown, there was nothing going on, there was no DJing and shit, so I thought maybe I'll just make some records for the fun of it that I like, that feel like stuff that I would want to
do
here.
Yeah,
and that was when I made like that Love and Touch EP and Talamanca, and they ended up being, you know, like, and Milo, my manager, sent them to Andy, and he ended up just loving them, and that was, he wanted to do it so badly that we were like, okay, well, let's just try it and see what happens.
Well, Talamanca's got to be the biggest record Andy signed.
I don't know.
I think it's got to be, mate. Because Andy's not been at FFRR for that long.
True, yeah. I guess he's pretty new to the label, right?
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm sure. Yeah, I don't know.
He's done some big records, but I think that's the big one.
We've never spoke about that, but yeah, I mean, possibly. I don't know.
That's dope. Because
I think what's nice is that there's no sort of, it's not, I didn't do like an album deal with FFRR or anything like that, so there's no pressure for me to
follow up or anything.
Because I've been in like major deals before as an artist, and it's never worked. Like, I just don't. I'm not geared for that kind of thing. Like, I can't. I don't think I can sort of be in that one world for too long. I have to like do other things.
Why not?
I don't know. It's just like I've always, like I said before, like I don't have a sound, or I can't figure that out anyway, and I think my attention span is low or something. I get bored of certain things so quick that I have to move on to something else. Otherwise, I just don't want to make music if it's me doing this one thing.
How do you do that in the Gaga situation or something else? Because you are purely just working on one project, right?
Yeah.
What's the difference between working on a project for somebody else and working on a project for yourself?
I think... I've always thought about that as well. I think it's just because the pressure isn't on me.
Yeah, yeah.
Because someone else can take the music and go and sort of front it themselves. Yeah. When it's not for me, I don't feel as weird about it for some reason. It's hard, it's weird because, yeah, I can definitely make an album for someone, but it's not me.
Yeah. Do you think if you had somebody working as like an exec for you, you could do an album?
I don't know, because I'm also very sort of particular about how I want stuff to sound as well. So I don't know if I could give the reins to anybody else for my own shit. It's really weird. It's like...
No, I get it. I get it.
I've tried to do it a few times, like do an album for myself. And for some reason, it just feels like the hardest thing to do.
Yeah.
Maybe I can't handle that pressure of it being me. Yeah. You know, like this is something I have to front myself. Like this is me in an album or whatever. Like, it feels like a lot of pressure. Whereas if it's somebody else, I love the idea of creating a sound for somebody rather than creating a sound for me for some reason. Yeah. And I don't know what that is.
I get that. I think it's also, I don't know, correct me if it's not this, but it kind of sounds like it's more like you like the creative, but it's not, once it's created, you can just let it go. It's not yours.
Yeah.
It can be somebody else's. Whereas if it's yours, you have to live with it for the rest of your life.
That probably is it. Yeah. It's like once it's finished, you can kind of move on to the next thing. Yeah. Whereas when it's for you, you've not only got that, however long the amount of time is to make it, you've also got however long it is afterwards to live with it and promote it and all that kind of stuff. And it feels just like I like to move quick, I guess, with stuff.
How have you found the whole promo thing for the records? Because it is you're not just I speak about this a lot on the podcast, but it's like you're not just the producer or the DJ or the artist. You're like everything now. You promote everything. You have to do everything yourself. How do you find that part of it?
I think that's another reason why I'm not like an artist is because I'm not very good at doing the whole keeping up the Instagram and getting on TikTok and all that stuff. I don't think it's like, just doesn't feel right for I'm just not the type of guy that does the like, hey, what's up guys, blah blah, like it just doesn't come naturally. So I feel like when you enjoy that kind of stuff, it also makes you more of an appealing artist to a fan. Like I, even though I've got, like for Talamanca, for example, even though that's a big tune, I still don't think that I have a fan base, which is pretty weird.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think there's any, like, hardcore Burns fans. Mm. They just, like, there's hardcore Talamanca fans.
Yeah.
But there aren't people that connect with me as an artist, because I don't think I really am, like, that kind of artist. It's more sort of... Yeah, it's hard to explain it, but...
I get that.
I'm sure there's, like, Will Clark fans, right?
Yeah.
Because you've got, like, a world around you as an artist, and you've got a sound for your stuff, and people really gravitate towards it and connect with it. Whereas for me, I don't think it's the same sort of thing. Mm. I feel like... there's people out there that love the tunes that I might have done, but they don't know who's behind it.
does that bother you?
Not really. Yeah. I feel like that's just the way it is with me. And that's why I feel okay with it, because I'm doing the pop thing at the same time.
Yeah.
I don't feel the pressure to be like an artist anymore. I used to.
Yeah, because I think what you like from what you're saying is it's like you're not really fussed about performing and selling tickets and making sure that is your whole income, right? Because in a situation like me, like I have to sell tickets to tour to earn money, because we all know that there's very little money in dance music in streams. Whereas if your full-time gig is on the pop side of things and you don't have to tour, then you don't have to build that up, I guess.
Yeah. Well, I feel like I think I gravitated towards the pop thing because I knew that I didn't really want to be like a full-time touring artist. I think because I had toured quite a lot up until like 2016, 2017 or whatever. Like, and I used to do a lot of shows with Calvin Harris. Yeah. Like me and him would go on the road a lot together and I would open up for him and stuff. And I was sort of making more like big room sounding music at the time. And I think I was just following what was working at the time. Like I was getting shows and it was fine. And I was sort of like going through the motions, but I wasn't necessarily enjoying the stuff I was making and I wasn't enjoying the shows that much either. Mm. And that was when it kind of changed for me. And I kind of had to like reassess it and think like, what do I really want to do? Cause like, I was just sort of like plodding along with being a producer, but not really enjoying the music. And that was when I decided to start making more music, writing more songs for other people. And that kind of sort of opened my eyes a bit to what I feel like I really am. Like I feel more like a producer than I do like an artist. And I'm the happiest when I'm in the studio making records for anything, just like for anyone. I like the creative process of making songs for somebody else and trying to help develop an artist, giving somebody a sound rather than giving myself one. It's quite a nice feeling.
I love that. And we don't need everyone to want to be an artist, right? We need everyone to be parts of the puzzle. And I think it's really important. And I think if everyone wanted to be an artist, it'd be an absolute shit show out there.
There'd be so many egos.
Exactly.
I think I just like being more behind the scenes. I don't like the idea of having to front something.
Yeah.
I don't want to be the face of it, really. I'd rather just be the guy that like makes it and then lets go of it, you know? It feels quite nice to do that.
I love that.
So yeah, I don't feel that pressure to have to be a touring artist because I can make records for other people and let them do that. But I love dance music. Like that's where I come from. And like my real passion when I'm making records is dance music. And that's where all of my sort of influences come from. So I don't think I'll ever like stop making dance records. Yeah. I just think that whole other aspect maybe just isn't for me.
Well, I think it's also in the situation where you're in is that, especially with like the FFRR stuff that you've been doing, is that you have a great label behind you that can make the records as big as possible without you having to do any of the artist side of it. Right.
Yeah.
And I think,
I think that having the FFRR name behind it counts for a lot as well.
Massively.
There's people out there that will listen to the tune just because of the label.
Yeah. And also labels like that have a lot more power than just putting it out on a smaller independent. They have the ability to put it on radio. Which is great because you're making great records for the that work really well on the radio as well.
And you're right, like you wouldn't necessarily have the opportunity for it to even get into the radio's hands if you didn't have, you know, a team like that behind the tune. So it does count for a lot as well.
Yeah, it's important, man. Yeah, wicked. What's
I
that?
Think that what's good about Andy and FRI is he's just like very passionate about the music. So yeah. He doesn't care about anything else really aside from the songs.
Yeah.
So he's just looking for records that he really connects with personally as well. So I think, and you can tell that from the way he talks about the tunes and the way he gives notes and stuff. Like, he's a super music head guy.
Yeah.
He's not one of those label exec people that doesn't know much about
music.
Yeah. And there is a lot of those people.
There's a lot of numbers people, isn't there, out there?
Yeah, yeah. But he's definitely the other side of it where he really cares about the music and sort of the legacy of the label, I think.
Yeah.
So that's good to know as well, that he's more focused on that than he is like trying to get me on TikTok or whatever. You know what I mean?
No, I think it's really important. I think it's really important. And realistically, like, they're taking the old school approach of the record label is that they're actually doing what a record label should do. Which is mad nowadays because it doesn't happen. And a lot of record labels give a record 2 weeks and then bin it off. And as an artist, as a producer, as somebody making music, when you've spent all this time on a record and then the label gives it a week, 2 weeks for it to potentially do well, like, and then forget about it because they're onto the next, it's kind of, I think that's what creates formulaic music, because it then makes people have to make music that's going to fit within the realms of what everyone's listening to.
Yeah, you're right. I think people start getting in the mindset of that sort of instant hit type stuff.
Yeah.
You know, it has to do this certain thing in order for it to work, because that's what this tune did or whatever.
Yeah, put a 90s hip hop sample on it and
and
you're laughing.
Get a Sierra acapella or whatever and we're good.
I tell you what though, that Do It record from Acraze,
it's a massive tune.
It's pretty fucking good. Like, he's done what a lot of people were trying to do very well.
Yeah, you can't deny that record.
No.
Big.
It's massive, and it, for some reason, I just sing it all the time and I don't think
because
I've listened.
It's so hypnotic. Yeah. It's that nursery rhyme. Ba, ba,
ba, ba,
yeah.
Ba,
ba. It's just like pure nursery rhyme vibes.
It's so hard to write records like that as well.
Yeah, man. That's why you just got to get the acapellas.
Love it.
You don't have to write it then.
Yeah, definitely. Have you got any music coming out? Any more music coming out as Burns, or are you taking time out?
Yeah, I mean, we did with FFRA, we did a deal for sort of like 4 records or something. So I think I've got another one coming. We're just trying to figure out what's cool is when I made Talamanca and those other tunes, I made a few, like I made like a bunch of tunes, and they're all kind of decent ideas, I think. So we're trying to figure out which one is the next one.
How nice is that though, to have all your options there and to be like, okay, this is great, but I need to work on it a little bit more. But you're not having to go into the studio and have the pressure to write a bunch of music just to please somebody, really.
It's good, but I'm also one of them guys that hates having to finish something. I'd rather start something new.
I can relate to that. I can massively relate to that. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's really annoying because you end up with loads of unfinished music as opposed to just one really good finished song.
Yeah.
But I
also think for me is like, I finish a record pretty quickly and then I know that it could have like an extra 10%. And for me, it's getting that extra 10% is
that's the thing.
Hard.
Like, I'll do a tune in a day, maybe, if it's that kind of record, and I'll bounce it out, and then I'll just live with that bounced for so long.
Yeah.
It's really difficult to go back in and tweak stuff.
I agree.
I kind of like love the one day bounce. So there's a few tunes like that where I've had them on my phone for a while and they're good, but they need like finessing.
Yeah. It's so hard to go in finesse. It's this like weird feeling when you're like almost opening the project up again and you're like, so what the fuck do I do?
Yeah, and more often than not, I'll do that and then close the project down and just start open up a new one. Start something else.
Yeah, definitely.
But also what you probably do the same thing as well, is I always love the last thing I made the most, even if it's not as good as the thing that's not finished.
Else, yeah.
And I always think it's the best thing, but it's probably not. It's like, I'll make something brand new and be like, this is the next single. Like, the idea is so cool. And then I'll send it to Andy. And he's like, nah, just finish the one from before that's really good. I'm like, okay. Like, I just can't finish it that easily. Yeah. I have to start new stuff.
No, I feel you on that. I feel you. It's good, though. I think it's nice because it, especially being able to work quickly, you can have a lot of ideas and
you
just got to put a bit of extra work in, which...
Mm-hmm.
It does suck, though. It does definitely suck.
Finishing stuff is the hardest thing.
Yeah. Yeah, finishing, mix down, that's the bit that I struggle with. And it's like, it's easy for me to like finish somebody else's record. Because I'm like, you need this. This has to happen here. This needs to do this. This needs to do that. But then when it's in my own record, I'm like, no, I like this. Like, why does it? It doesn't need to be finished. It's done.
I'm the same. I can definitely finish something that isn't mine. Yeah. But it's for me. It's again, I think it's like the pressure thing.
Yeah.
Like I'm scared to finish my own tune.
Do you ever get to the point, I'm doing a remix at the moment and it's like, I've got the like body of the remix that I'm like, this sounds dope, and now I have to like arrange it and everything, and I'm like, I don't want to arrange it.
It's annoying, yeah.
Because it's like,
I love that thing where you get the sort of idea down, and you just listen to that
for like 2 days.
Yeah, like I'll just go back in and be like, yeah, this is good, but just never arrange, like never do the intro or the outro or any of that. Just the middle bit is good, and I know it's good, so I'll just leave it for
a while. It's interesting, that. It's definitely interesting. Dude, we've
definitely
just,
like a common thing.
Yeah, we've just done an hour and 20 minutes. Let's wrap this motherfucker up. Yeah, it's flown by. Thanks for coming on, man. It's been really good to catch up. It's been really good to catch up.
No, man, I've enjoyed it. It's been good to get to speak to you over a non-text vibe. I know, right?
Likewise. We'll have to catch up when I'm in LA next. I think I'm in LA in January.
Hit me up. You need to come to the studio or whatever.
Yeah, definitely. January the 15th, I'm playing in LA as well.
Wicked. Well, I'm finally going back to Europe.
Oh, are you?
Which will be the first time I've been back in Europe for 2 years.
No way. What? Are you coming to England?
Yeah, to see my family. Yeah. I haven't seen them since like the whole COVID thing. So
you're taking the kids over.
Yeah, and they haven't even met my kids yet. Yeah. So it's wild. But I'll be back mid-January. So man, just hit me when you're here.
Yeah, man. Sounds good. Right, mate. Let's do the promo bit. How can people follow you?
Oh, yeah. I better get my TikTok
set up. Get it in, isn't it?
Instagram is just Burns Music.
Sick.
And that's it. There's Twitter as well, which is the same, but I don't use it.
Twitter's a wild...
Yeah, I don't go on Twitter at all anymore, but I feel like people do use it still a lot.
People love Twitter, but I post and ghost on Twitter. I like post and just get the fuck out of there and just let it do its thing.
The only time I go on there is to see, to like find stuff out. Like,
like the news.
If something's going on, I'll like search on Twitter to see what the gossip is.
Yeah.
But I use it as like a news feed and that's it.
Gossip column. Dude, keep safe. Have a great Christmas as well with the family, and I'll speak to you soon.
Yeah. Yeah, man. Appreciate
Peace, man.
Speak soon, bro.
Bye, mate.
Peace.
And that's a wrap. Big love to everybody that's listening. Hope you enjoyed it. Have a great Christmas. Keep safe. Do everything that you want to do. Make the best time with your family and friends or whatever you're doing. Keep safe, and I'll see you next time. And also, thank you so much for listening this year. It's been a good one. We've got one more podcast to end the year out. Make sure it's a good one. Big love.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
You need parts? O'Reilly Auto Parts has parts. Need them fast? We've got fast. No matter what you need, we have thousands of professional parts people doing their part to make sure you have it. Product availability. Just one part that makes O'Reilly stand apart. The professional parts people.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High-quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.